opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Space is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new place. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Zone.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Junius Ricardo Stanton, straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton, and I'm your host and facilitator for today's program.
We started off the program with Gil Scott-Heron, Your Daddy Loves You, in celebration of Father's Day. And over the weekend, we attended the 22nd annual Father's Day Rally Committee's Celebration to Fatherhood cookout in Fairmount Park. We got a chance to sit down and talk to Bilal Quayam, who is one of the co-founders of the Father's Day Rally Committee. He's a grassroots community organizer. He's a former employee of the city of Philadelphia. Got involved, actively involved in many, many campaigns around education, violence prevention, reintegration with ex-offenders, school safety, and now he's in a midst of a comprehensive plan that has garnered the support of many of the major players in the city, the mayor, the district attorney, grassroots brothers from across the city. He's linking with the Hispanic community, and we'll hear him describe all of that after we come back from our public service announcements. We'll also hear from Lorraine Ballard-Mara, who is the Community Affairs Director of Clear Channel and the six Clear Channel stations in Philadelphia. We'll also hear from Judge Jimmy Moore, who recently resigned the bench in the Municipal Court of Philadelphia, the County of Philadelphia, and he has thrown his hat into the ring to be the candidate to attempt to unseat long-term incumbent congressman in the first congressional district in Pennsylvania, Bob Brady. And we'll speak to him and he'll share his vision, and you'll get some insight into what he's about and what he's up to. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Greetings to the Internet Radio family. This is Reverend Valentine speaking. You know, for nearly 30 years, I have had the distinct experience of being interviewed over every medium of communication available to the public. And except for the metaphysical underground, I can think of no other electronic venue that has been more progressive, more innovative, more insightful, more diligent, more diverse in its demographics, and more courageously supportive of the truth than this ever-growing phenomenon called Internet radio. And this is precisely why I'm here to tell you that it is so vital that you give your wholehearted support to it. Tell a friend. In fact, tell 2, 3, and 4 of your friends. If you are a business owner, support Internet radio by telling your customers and constituents all about it. Let them know that there is a legitimate and important substitute to all of the prefabricated, super-censored garbage polluting our public airways today. Don't allow the mass media to continue to treat you like a mindless consumer drone. Enhance your awareness. Indulge your critical thinking, your reasoning, and your analysis. Do as I do. Log on, listen in, and then let it be known all about your internet radio experience. Chimatep, beloved family, thank you for listening. Walk in light.
Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com. Or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul at blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's I-R-E-L-E-N-D, Place, Suite
109 Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support. You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned. From the rampart, dispatches from the front line, observations and commentary on the psychological warfare and the battle for our mind, body, and soul with Junius Ricardo Stanton. No wonder America is broke. Quote, on September 10, 2001, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld held a press conference to disclose that over $2 trillion in Pentagon funds could not be accounted for. Rumsfeld stated, according to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. According to a report by the Inspector General, the Pentagon cannot account for 25% of what it spends. Such a disclosure normally might have sparked a huge scandal. However, the commencement of the attack on New York City and Washington in the morning would assure that the story remained buried. To the trillions already missing from the coffers, an obedient Congress terrorized by anthrax attacks would add billions more in appropriations to fight the war on terror. Unquote. Quote, 9/11 Research, WTC7.net/September11/trillion. Recently, the corporate media revealed that billions of dollars sent to Iraq shortly after the illegal invasion of that country on bogus claims by the Bush administration about weapons of mass destruction are unaccounted for. To make matters worse, it is suspected that much of that money may have been stolen. Quote, reporting from Washington, after the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in March 2003, the George W. Bush administration flooded the conquered country with so much cash to pay for reconstruction and other projects in the first year that a new unit of measurement was born. Pentagon officials determined that one giant C-130 Hercules cargo plane could carry $2.4 billion in shrink-wrapped bricks of $100 bills. They sent an initial full plane load of cash, followed by 20 other flights to Iraq by May 2004 in a $12 billion haul that the U.S. officials believe to be the largest international cash airlift of all time. This month, the Pentagon and the Iraqi government are finally closing the books on the program that handled all those Benjamins. But despite years of audits and investigations, U.S. defense officials still cannot say what happened to $6.6 billion in cash, enough to run the Los Angeles United School District or the Chicago Public Schools for a year, among other things. For the first time, federal auditors are suggesting that some or all of the cash may have been stolen, not just mislaid in an accounting error. Stuart Bowen, Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, an office created by Congress, said the missing $6.6 billion may be, quote, the largest theft of funds in national history, unquote, taken from the Los Angeles Times, June 13, 2011. There are billions missing in Iraq. They have no clue where it is, who took it, and no one goes to jail. Meanwhile, here at home, the wheels are falling off the wagon. Cities, counties, states, and even the U.S. government are broke. Governments are cutting social programs, quote, borrowing, unquote, from their employees' pension funds, which are themselves already severely underfunded, and have taken major hits in the crash of 2008, and people are okay with that. Yet, no one goes to jail. Bernie Madoff went to jail only because he turned himself in, not because of any investigation by the SEC, FBI, or U.S. attorneys. Inside Job, a documentary that reveals how the economic implosion happened and who caused it, won an Academy Award.
but none of the culprits went to jail. At least with Enron and WorldCom, a few folks were prosecuted, convicted, and jailed.
I guess the new jack criminals who are ripping off our tax dollars in Iraq know how to avoid getting caught and prosecuted. News like this is read while Americans stare blankly at the television screen, but seem not to care. We have been so inundated by Hollywood degenerate excrement and Madison Avenue psychobabble designed to manipulate us into spending and buying things we don't need, but are conditioned to believe are indispensable for our daily lives and our self-esteem, we seem not to comprehend this country's moral and fiscal implosion. At this point, we seem numb to what is happening around us. I believe this is by design. The U.S. government at the highest levels is a criminal enterprise that facilitates the theft of trillions of dollars on behalf of the kleptocrats who set policy to be enforced by the fat cat politicians they bribe and coerce into doing their bidding. The corporate media, which always presents a worldview and values that reflect the aims and objectives of the owner class, is not going to hammer these facts home. Yes, I will admit they do mention these stories every once in a while, but they don't spend the same amount of time on them that do on dribble about Congressman Wiener or Charlie Sheen, and that too is deliberate. Their goal is to keep us distracted, dumbed down, and deceived. The United States, like most Western economies, is undergoing major economic stress and depression right now. In fact, the U.S. government itself is actually on the verge of default, unable to pay its bills unless it raises the debt ceiling in order to continue borrowing money from around the world. One reason the U.S. is broke is because of the fraud, theft, and corruption within the government itself. On September 10, 2001, the day before 9/11, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld held a press conference to announce $2.3 trillion was unaccounted for. That was the first time the word trillion was used in the context of government operations. Of course, the next day, 9/11, everything changed. That change, quote-unquote, allowed the embezzlement, fraud, and theft to continue unabated, especially once the U.S. invaded Iraq under the false pretext of weapons of mass destruction. The military-industrial complex and the U.S. Department of Defense are responsible for trillions of U.S. dollars disappearing without a trace. No investigations, no one goes to jail or before a firing squad. Yet if some poor slob fails to pay his traffic tickets or child support, he goes to jail. Crime and punishment, as we shall see in future articles, is a function of race and, to a lesser degree, class in America. Meanwhile, in the U.S. Congress, our elected representatives are getting richer from the bribes, inside deals, and investment opportunities they are offered while the rest of us watch our minuscule assets go up in smoke before our eyes. Quote, despite a stubbornly sour national economy, congressional members' personal wealth collectively increased by more than 16% between 2008 and 2009, according to a new study by the Center of Responsive Politics of Federal Financial Disclosures, released earlier this year. And while some members' financial portfolios lost value, no need to bemoan most lawmakers' financial lot. Nearly half of them, 261, are millionaires, a slight increase from the previous year, the center studies find. That compares to about 1% of Americans who lay claim to the same lofty fiscal status. Of these congressional millionaires, 55 have an average calculated wealth in 2009 of $10 million or more, with 8 in the $100 million plus range. Unquote. That's taken from www.commondreams.org/newswire/2011/11/17-0. Former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi saw her wealth jump 62% in 2010. Quote, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California, saw her net worth rise 62% last year, cementing her status as one of the wealthiest members of Congress. Pelosi is worth at least $35.2 million in the 2010 calendar year, according to a financial disclosure report released Wednesday. She reported a minimum of $43.4 million in assets and about $8.2 million in liabilities. For 2009, Pelosi reported a minimum worth of $21.7 million. Unquote. Taken from thehill.com/blogs/onthemoney. Pelosi's Republican counterpart, John Boehner, saw his wealth jump considerably last year also. Quote, Speaker John Boehner, Republican from Ohio, also remained a multimillionaire. He reported that his minimum net worth in 2010 was close to $2.1 million with zero liabilities. His 2009 minimum net worth was more than $1.8 million, unquote, taken from the same source, thehill.com. How much did your assets or bank account increase last year? Did the value of your house increase or go down in 2010? I maintain if you extrapolate the billions lost in Iraq and the trillions stolen over the years in the Department of Defense across the other government agencies like HUD, Interior, and add the white-collar crime and graft in Medicaid, you won't have to wonder why or how the U.S. is broke. This is Junius Ricardo Stanton from The Rampart. We're speaking with Bilal Fayoum, who is a activist. He's a former employee with the city of Philadelphia, but he's basically been a mainstay when it comes to community development, economic empowerment, peace and civility, and also African-American manhood. And number one, I want to commend you for, I heard you say this is the 22nd year, for, and even before you did that, you were doing other things. So I just want to commend you for being who you are and doing what you do. Tell us how you do it.
Thank you.
How you find the, energy.
I think that, and you hear people say this, and the older I get, I think I understand it more. You know, I'm on like a mission, you know, and life, everybody should have life goals, life missions. And my mission, I founded years ago, was really to enhance and enrich the development of black people in America. So this is just one of those activities through the years I've been involved in to do that. And what has become more and more important to me is dealing with the development of African American males. And when you look at all the national statistics and even the local statistics, 3,460 Philadelphians killed in the last 10 years. Out of that number, 2,450 were black males. We make up 50% of or more of joblessness rate in the city of Philadelphia. There is between 300,000 ex-offenders, and majority of them are African-American males, 48% dropout rate among black males. So we're at a crisis. We really are. So us pushing the envelope, coming up with solutions, and one of the things we did work on as an organization is spearheaded this whole movement in the last 6 months to create an agenda, a 10-year agenda to address the crisis of black men. So, you know, all
those
things.
You pushed the city to do that?
No, we did.
Okay.
I mean, we called the meeting. We had representatives. The mayor was there. Seth Williams, the DA. Bob Archie, head of SRC. Bruce Carley, who's the former head of the chamber. Jerry Montezon for the NAACP. We had brothers from the streets. We had doctors. We had attorneys. We had undertakers. We had business folks. We had young folks. I mean, the whole smorgasbord of the black community, male community in the city of Philadelphia came together. We called for us developing that agenda. It took us 6 months. And we actually developed an agenda that addresses four issues: health, economic development, criminal justice, and
education.
So we're addressing those four issues with recommendations and benchmarks on and timetable. We'd like to see movement on those recommendations. And the difference between that effort and in the past with black agendas in the city, and I've been involved since the first one was done in 1972, is that we really put a benchmark and timetable to get something done. We're going to reconvene in the fall and see where we are. 6 months after that, we're going to reconvene again. So we're going to constantly meet. The committees are meeting again. They're moving on some of the recommendations. And, you know, hopefully we'll begin to see an impact in another year or so in relationship to black males in the city of Philadelphia.
But you've always been, you haven't been a gadfly kind of person just raising issues. You've always been about programmatic solutions. So how is this different from, say, your ex-offender initiative, your Safe Carter initiative, the things that you've done over the years?
I think that what this is different is that this is a true, so far, and it's holding, a true coalition of black males in the city of all backgrounds, all, you know, all lifestyles, who agreed to come together and support this effort. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's in itself was a major.
Yeah, but you've always had that, though.
Well, not at the level now. I mean,
I know, but I mean,
the mayor,
you're
the VA, and all of them sitting at the table,
right.
saying we agree to support this effort to do this agenda, because they all realize we're in this crisis. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're working, doing well. Or if you're not doing well, you know, in America, if you're black male, you got some issues. You won't have some issues. I mean, look, we got a president who was duly elected, and they're still questioning his citizenship. They're questioning his academic credentials. I mean, no, come on, man. You know, so if you're a black man in America, you're constantly staying under the somebody's thumb or trying to keep under the thumb. So our position is, let's recognize the problem. Let's take ownership of the problem, and then let's stop it. So I don't care, you know, what white folks think. I really don't. We got to organize, and we got to work and solve our problems. Do we need their support? Clearly. You know, but as we move forward, too, we got to be building coalitions. I mean, the day is a perfect example. You're seeing history. Behind you, you're seeing history. The first time you got black men playing Latino men in a softball game, you know, and it's that I'm aware of, the city of Philadelphia. So this is history being made. This is our third year. We're working very closely with the men from the Latino community and the black community with us, and we're
building that coalition. How'd you build those bridges? How'd you go about that?
Because, see,
after the 10,000 men effort that was called here in the city, the Latinos felt left out. So they did their own kind of call out, and they call back to basics. Well, some of the leadership in the Latino community are friends of mine, and we talked, and I said, let me come to one of your meetings. And I came to one of the meetings, and I said, look, we need to talk about how we can work together, because we have more in common than we have. White folks look at y'all the same way they look at black. You might think, because you got more of a class problem in your community than I think you do in our community, but still. So they said yes, but I said we got to talking. They held their cleanup. They did kind of like a major barbecue 3 years ago in their community. I attended, and then the following meeting they had, I attended, and someone suggested that we do this softball game. And we see each year it's going to grow. This year they brought food.
Oh, okay.
You know, so we got our food, you know, we're cooking. But they said behind you is rice and beans.
Okay.
And you know, we're getting ready to wait for them to come up that I get into. And so they bought their food. So next year we're talking about how even to make it bigger.
Right.
So we got to bridge the gap. So, I mean, as we're working on our issues, I'm saying our issues, and I'm not going to back off that, the black male, and I ain't hesitating. You know, some folks get upset with me. So, how are you talking about black on black crime and stuff? And I said, yeah, because black folks are killing black.
Us, yeah.
Well, we're killing each other.
Right.
And all those homicides, I just named, and we're not a white killing a black. It's all black killing black. So we got a problem. So let's recognize it. And, you know, it's like anything. You get involved in drugs. You got a drug problem. If you stay in denial, you don't deal with it. As soon as you recognize it and come out of denial, then you start realizing. So I'm saying we're in denial with our crisis. Let's recognize we have a crisis. And then let's work together to solve that crisis. And we have had a rich history in the city of Philadelphia. You go back to the days of Richard Allen, and looked at all the stuff we did, and
Cato.
I mean, we have a rich history in the city. In the 70s, I had an opportunity to work with the House of Moser and Benny Swans, the Crisis Intervention. We had a gang problem. We eliminated gangs. You know, when we had a political problem, we built a political base because they was elected black mayor. So we have had a rich history of addressing issues that affect black folks in the city. So let's build on our history, and let's recognize the greatness of our ancestors who did that in Philadelphia. I'm not talking across the country. And let's build on it. So I'm inspired by that every day. You know, and I realize John has worked with the Father's Day Rally Committee for the last 22 years. You know, most brothers really want to do the right thing. They just need help, support, you know, because everybody gets down. You know, everybody gets frustrated. I mean, last couple of weeks, I've been kind of like down.
But I mean,
part of that is this, I know I'm tired.
Right.
And I admit it.
Take a break.
Yeah, I'm getting ready. That's it. Tomorrow. For the rest of the week. I have a friend, one of the guys who honored Friday night at our awards, Dr. Reginald Banks. He's a young black psychiatrist. He's on Parkside Avenue called Dunbar Associates. Me and him talked, and he said, "Blau, as a psychiatrist, you got to take a break."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, even said, "If you want to come call me up, we meet, let's talk."
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm constantly, you know, I told my wife, I need a break. She kind of looked at me. And she would, in the last week and a half, she'd been watching my behavior and certain things. She said, yeah,
so
I think
moves and swinging and all that.
Well, not so much that, you know, just doing stuff I shouldn't be doing, you know. So she said, yeah, I think you need a break. So, so I'm just saying, so that's with everybody.
Right.
You know,
right.
But the more support and we get from folks, the more effort, the greater it is. Mm-hmm. You know,
how do you blend, because you are a father yourself, how do you blend the what you do with your family? I know your wife supports you, but
yeah.
how do you do that? Because that's an issue that a lot of brothers have.
Well, one, first of all, I have 5 grown children, now I got grandkids, you know, and I love them to death, but the great part about being a grandparent is that you love your grandkids to death, you bring them over to the house, you kiss them all.
Home.
Time to go. Get the bag. Throw it out here. You know, so, but I've been fortunate to have, you know, my kids went, you know, like every child went, you know, children are, go through trials and tribulations, but they all seem to be holding in and doing pretty well. I'm very proud. I have a granddaughter. My oldest granddaughter is a senior at Howard. And my oldest grandson, my mother was standing here, he graduated last week from MO Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to to Temple.
Okay.
So, you know, I've been fortunate that so far I have 12 grandkids. But the two, my mission is to make sure all 12 of them go to college if they want to. You know, I mean, that's, you know, and I'm, I know there's this big debate about should people go to college, and all that. I just think that college is very important, but when you go, you got to be focused. So you just can't go to take liberal arts. Like my grandson has been talking about medical. So I said, you want to go to medical school? You want to be a doctor? He said, I think so. My granddaughter wants to be an attorney. I know more attorneys that I work in. But the good part about being an attorney is, you know, it's the legal, it's the thinking, it's the writing. I always think about Malcolm. You know, Malcolm talked about how important education is. And he didn't talk about from this the reading, writing, arithmetic. He talks about you thinking and you're analyzing and you're using your brain. And most brothers don't do that. That's when they go off in arguments, they pull the gun. So they're not thinking out. They're not analyzing their actions. They just react.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's due to what their brain. How their brain is thinking. And once again, Malcolm used to talk about that a lot. People don't, you know, I always use that example what he talks about education. From the standpoint of this, being able to think, analyze, and make decisions and stuff like that, which is an important tool you need to do to have in society.
Plus, it's, you know, move personal development as opposed to just being indoctrinated and stuff. How can people get involved with what you're doing in this area? And if people who are listening to this outside of the Philadelphia area,
well, they can go to our webpage, is fdrc.net. All our programs are listed on our web, or they can call our office at 215-236-3372, or they can email me at bilalq@verizon.net.
Okay. All right, brother. Thank you for taking the time.
Hey,
and take your time and get rest out.
I've been looking at what kind of one of those pieces I can hustle off.
All right, good brother.
Did you get all of them from here?
Huh?
All them from him?
Yeah. I got... We're speaking with Lorraine Ballard Morrow, who is the public affairs director for Clear Channel in Philadelphia, and she's been in the area, you said 28 years?
28 years,
You look like a little kid.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been great, 28 years.
Yeah.
You asked me a question earlier about how do I manage... to work with 6 stations, and I think it's because they each have their own very unique qualities. Power and GAS are probably the ones that are on the street the most, and they're the most active. But the other stations do a lot with social media and online.
Okay, right.
So, for instance, Radio 104.5. Green is their central motif. So they do a lot of work with green and also food.
Mm-hmm.
They have a CD that they sell in return for canned goods, and we've raised like 10 tons of food for Phil Abundance. Yeah, so there's different approaches. Obviously, with
Now, how do you deal with what's the focus for the country station? You know, how does that get involved?
Well, we don't have a country station. We have a Q102, which is like a CHR contemporary hit, obviously WDAS, Power 99, Radio 104.5 is a rock station. We have Mix 106, which is kind of a dance station, and then we have Rumba 1480, which is Spanish.
Oh, okay.
So.
Now, are you bilingual yourself? Or how
no,
do you do?
Not at all.
Okay.
No, but I have somebody who does our public affairs program in Spanish. That's the only show I don't do,
right.
Public affairs wise. And but I produce the show, so it's great.
So how many hours are you either on the air, and then how many hours are you doing behind the scenes, the editing, and then how many hours are you out in the community?
Oh, gosh, that's hard
so
to say.
For your total week.
I don't know. It somehow seems to add up to over 40 hours a week. I do two shows that air on five stations, so that helps. I don't do separate
okay,
shows
so you don't have
stations.
To do separate. Okay,
yeah, because
right.
Otherwise I would be very, very insane. But it's good. It's fun. And because the different stations have different audiences, it gives me an opportunity to spread out and do lots of different things. So I enjoy that.
So how do you do that? Because, I mean, you always had a reputation of being in the community and being accessible. So now you're doing it with six. So how do you find the time to do that?
We do need them.
Well, I do focus a lot on Power and DAS, but a lot of things that I do also represent. I represent all stations when I go out and speak or MC. So that's probably the difference. It used to be that I would go out to every block party, you know, every rally, and I can't do that anymore. It's not possible. But I
do
try
people
to
understand that because that was your forte, that you were so accessible and so amenable to just about everything. So now that you have so many more responsibilities, do people understand that? You know, they
people
grasp
are very understanding. I think everybody understands how the world is downsized, that we don't have as much staff as we used to. Everyone is very understanding of that. Sometimes you can't avoid disappointing people, but I think we do the best we can with what little we have in terms of people power. And I have some great interns, and in fact, they're out there.
Oh, so they're playing?
They're actually giving out tickets now.
Oh, okay.
They're right over
there.
They're giving away tickets to Transformers.
Okay, all right.
Doing a great job. They're very enthusiastic. I have great interns. Hey, Lucas. Hi.
we need to say we're out at the Father and the 22nd annual Father's Day rally. How has the business changed? I mean, you were always fortunate enough to be in a station that valued your talents, let you do what you did well. But like we were saying before we started the recording, the stations have gone through a lot of changes, a lot of ownership transitions. So how has that impacted what you do, or has?
Well, I think what it's primarily done is that it just means that when I started, I used to be part of a team of about 14 people, and now I'm basically me, and I have a part-time person who does anchoring. But in terms of all the community outreach and stuff, it's pretty much me. I used to have LaRonda Upshur for many years. She was my former intern. I finally got to hire her, and she became the morning anchor and our public affairs director. So that was great. You just have to figure out different strategies. You have to also try not to do think that you have to do every single thing. Just prioritize and do the best you can and try to utilize what resources you have.
Have you experienced a big difference working for a conglomerate as opposed to like a limited corporation where they only had a few stations? Now you have like zillions, like 1,500 stations.
It's definitely different. It's a corporation. That's different. There's centralization of a lot of our business operations, and there are certain dictates that come across because of corporate dictates. So in that respect, that's true. And also because we're all consolidated into one building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be that there were fresh fries every Friday at VAS in the back parking lot. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Power used to have, you know, we used to be kind of crazy in the around. We used to do crazy things. Q102 used to party all the time in the hallways. And it's a much more sedate environment, but it's different. You know, but we still have a tremendous power to help people and
right.
to try to do what we can with what we have. It is different. You know, that's just kind of the natural way of evolution. You know, businesses change and things are different. And I think the problem that people sometimes have is just adjusting to change.
Right.
You know, because technology has had a huge impact as well. I've always been a total geek when it comes to computers. I have the first PC at the station before we became computerized. And I think that you, in order to really be successful in any business, you have to be flexible, and so I have been that.
Right. Flexible. Now, most of the major corporations have embraced the social media, Twitter
yes.
and Facebook,
yeah.
things like that. So how has that changed what you do?
Well, every time I do things, I tweet about it or I have something on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I try to utilize all of that. And, you know, the rest of our company is hugely involved in social media. We're very, very involved in all the cutting-edge social media that there is. And so we're really as much a media company as we are a radio company.
Okay.
You know, we all really consider ourselves a media company.
Mm-hmm.
It provides content across many platforms
mm-hmm.
with six really great brands.
Okay.
And that's kind of how
right.
it
okay.
looks
right.
at.
Okay.
But you know, there's a part of me that does miss, you know, those days when, you know, you had the real characters hanging around, wandering around
mm-hmm.
the radio station.
Well, but still, I mean, the last time I was there, when you had us there for, when you helped us out with the golf tournament, I mean, you had a concert going on at one station. You had people waiting out in the area to be interviewed. You interviewed us. It seemed like the suite was all, it's not like it's boring. Or
no,
it's
not, not at all. It's fun. It's exciting. We're bringing in artists all the time. We had Jill Scott in the other day. Faith, Patti LaBelle. We have all these artists because we're creating not only what we have in the air, but all this online
right,
content.
Right,
we
right,
put it on
right.
on the online.
Now, so you film that? You film the concerts that you had in the building,
we
and
do.
Then you stream them?
Yeah, not me personally, but
right,
we do
right,
have
right.
a team that does
right.
all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So that makes it kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of artists coming in now.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you streaming some of the interviews and some of the shows that you do?
Yes, you can always stream them online.
Visual-wise. Yeah.
Well, you know, I haven't done that yet. We have done, and I've emceed different town hall meetings
mm-hmm.
with the mayor
mm-hmm.
and people like that we've streamed live
right,
video.
Right.
But for the most part, when I do interviews, those do get posted on the website as podcasts.
Right, okay,
so we try to utilize
okay.
utilize that. But yeah, that might be the next thing. You
okay.
know?
Yeah.
Try to create video podcasts
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
The audio.
Yeah, yeah. Now, with that, do you have to worry about marketing and advertising? Or that's a whole separate account or separate division?
Well, I don't worry about it.
I don't mean worry. I mean, do you have to embed the ads and worry and that when you do your podcast and all?
Not really. I mean, I pretty much do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also cognizant of the fact that everything, in order to survive, needs to be
right.
monetized.
Right.
So if I can figure out a way to get a sponsor to come in and buy in on the Father's Day Rally Picnic
mm-hmm.
or have something underwritten by a sponsor, but then we provide the content, and I do
mm-hmm.
think that way because
mm-hmm.
that's
the nature of the business.
That's the nature of the business, and it certainly helps the survival of what we do to make it, you know, make sense from a business standpoint.
Speaking of survival, what are your keys to survival? Because like you said earlier, so many people have transitioned for any number of reasons. Yet you're here, you still have a high level of credibility in the community and appreciation and acceptability. So what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think, first of all, I try to be my word. I try to have integrity. I try to follow through, and when I can't, I try to just let people know that I can and apologize. So I try to be my word. I try to have integrity, so I think that's important. I think I also... I also try to always learn, never assume that I know everything. I learn from my interns. I always keep on the cutting edge of whatever the new developments are. I try to be helpful. I think that part of my success is the fact that I do know how to get things done, you know, in the city, and that people do rely on that. I mean, I have gotten people out of some serious jams more than once, and so that's good. And
but I mean, the other thing is, there's never, in an era where negativity and controversy sells, you've never been attached or affiliated with anything like that. So
yeah, I mean, you have to be true to yourself. And unfortunately, nobody's ever told me that I can't. So I'm really lucky. I've always had people who understood me and understood there is some value in what I do and what I bring to the table. And so as long as that happens, and I'll be here, and when that stops happening, then it's time not to be here. So fortunately, everyone's been very supportive and appreciative, and I'm just really lucky. I have the best job in the world, and I'm just very lucky.
You radiate that. Just so our listeners can know, when are your programs aired? When are the podcasts are available on demand, right?
Right. My shows are usually they're on Sunday mornings from 7 to 7:30 on most of the stations, on DAS from 6 to 7. And then the podcasts are usually available by Monday, close of business. So if anyone missed it or wanted to listen, they could download.
So how long are they archived for?
For a year.
Okay.
So you can go back link to it or download it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think the ambience is getting a little loud around here. So.
Yeah, it's a party.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the time out. Now we're waiting for Bilal so we can both do what we came here to do.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Spell that for me again.
J-I-M-M-I-E.
More.
M-O-R-E.
Okay. All right. And you have recently announced your candidacy for, what's it, the first or the second?
It's first
congressional district here. Okay. Right. So you cover Philadelphia. That district covers Philadelphia, Delaware County.
Delaware County, Chester. It's Chester. It's Yaden. It's Upper Darby. Darby. Tinicum Township. East Abroad. Parts of West Philly.
Okay. All right. What prompted you to do that?
Well, I've been on the benches for approximately 11
You're a municipal
half,
or?
Municipal.
Yeah, right.
11 and a half years. In that course of time, I've just seen various problems. I mean, it's a situation. Normally, when folks come at that point in time, in terms of the system, we're reacting.
Yeah, right.
I want to take a more proactive stance. The first district has, by the Pew Foundation, it's been rated as second hungriest in America.
No kidding.
Okay, yeah. And all of us understand nutrition, correlation between eating properly, going to school,
functioning,
and where you're going to end up in life is very, very crucial. It's one of the highest districts of unemployment and dropout rates. There is no jobs there. We must take a proactive role because that's our future. So I'm running for the future. I'm running for those folks who may not have a voice, those folks that need a voice. That's our brain trust. So,
but you're going up against a strongly entrenched incumbent who, in his various incarnations, has been the head of the party. He's done all this kind of stuff. So what are you going to do differently from anybody else's challenge?
I'm going directly to the people. I'm making my case directly to the people. And essentially, that's where it's going to be. I'm going to appeal to the people and to the community. There's been 12 years of the current situation. And quite frankly, the question is, are you better off? Well, are you better off now than you were 12 years ago? And I mean, I think statistically shows that that the district is not.
So, as you assess the situation in the district, what's your strategy to, number one, to be elected, and then to make some changes, major changes?
Well, the strategy in terms of being elected, we are formulating our plans now.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the district, as I indicated before. We're going directly and take our appeal directly to the people. We will do, and we will bring not only to the electorate, we're going to be very, very creative. We've got to think out of the box.
Right, right.
I mean, that's what it's going to take to move the situation forward.
Mm-hmm.
So we will, in the coming weeks, we're going to come out with some creative ideas. Some creative strategies in terms of how to move the district forward.
What about money? Because it seems the way things are structured, incumbents obviously have the name recognition, and most of the time they have a war chest. So how you gonna deal with
well,
that?
Well, as the Bible says, where there's faith, where there's hope, then we will prevail.
Mm-hmm.
As you well know, folks said the same question to President Obama. Where is it going to come from? So the nickels, the pennies, the dollars, they added up to what was necessary. His message resonated with the general public in the country, and now we have a president. So, I mean, we must be about prevailing faith. We can't sit back
right,
and say,
right.
Woe is me,
yeah,
or
oh,
it can't happen,
I
it's
can't
too
make
big.
It. Yeah,
can't do that.
Yeah,
I mean, for 11 and a half years, I've seen folks come in and out and going nowhere. I mean, even if I started a program, a paralegal program, not only for community-based people, for reentry people, toward them getting a career,
right,
not just
right,
a job,
right,
a career.
Right.
So you know, if all of us, we have children, and what happens is once we punish our children, do we then cast them out of the family forever? No, we love them. Okay, Johnny, come back. We bring them back to the family. Reentry, they go, they come back, there's nothing there for them.
Yeah,
there's approximately 200,000 to 300,000 folks out there in that reentry community.
Yeah.
That's a whole brain drain, brain waste that we have to do something creative about. We must take these tax takers and make them taxpayers. And they want to do
right.
it. The majority of them want to do that. So we got to do things creatively and out of the box.
What are some of the things that you hope to do to change the people? Because the mindset in Washington at this point, unless there's a major change, we're going to see a major shift even further to the right. So they tend not to appreciate social programs.
Well,
so how are you going to?
This
know,
is not a social program. I'm not promoting.
No, but I know. But
I'm not promoting a social program. I'm promoting an economic program.
Okay, so
if I take 200,000 to 300,000 people and take them from tax takers to taxpayers, that's a tremendous tax base, real estate taxes, sales taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can convert that, can you imagine the dollars it would mean in terms of the economic, not only economic stimulus in terms of the goods and services that they're going to purchase, but also in terms of the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, so folks want to look at it as a social program, but it's not. It's an economic program. We got 200,000 to 300,000 people who want to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if we properly direct them to work, then what they're going to do is they're going to be productive individuals, individuals who are going to be able to contribute to our taxes, contribute to our society. So it's an economic program. It's not a social program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. As crazy as this may seem, you would think that people would embrace something like that. But we've also seen how this whole spirit of recalcitrance and just negativity is causing major gridlock in D.C. So how do you attempt to deal with that?
It's one day at a time. I mean, if I come in with the attitude that this is what it is, then that's what it's going to be. I'm not coming in with that. I know that in terms of the first district, I know what the problems are in terms of the first particular thing. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to do a listening tour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm going to travel around the district. I'm going to actually talk to folks. Because what my perspective in terms of truth may be the problem, may not be the problem.
Okay,
so I want to actually listen on ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
Find out, well, what do you find to be the problem? I will take that message to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And day by day, I will get a district, not 100%, but 150%.
Mm-hmm. Where's your headquarters located?
We're in the process.
You just made the announcement.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're in the process of putting all of our infrastructures together.
Mm. You have a contact number or email or anything at this point? Okay, now you do have a website up and running, right? Okay.
We have a website. It's www.jimmymoore.com. JimmyMoore.com.
Mm-hmm. Now, you just got in, and you're in for the long haul.
Man.
What do you see as your, other than getting your office up and your infrastructure going, what's your first priority as a candidate?
My first priority as a candidate is to listening, to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got to understand what the needs are. Got to listen. And that's my first priority.
Mm-hmm.
First, listen, and from listening, I will formulate my platform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have a staff yet?
Growing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Growing. Right.
Okay. Obviously, you have a sense of what's happening in the community from being on the bench and from being out there having to campaign, because here in Pennsylvania, judges do have to campaign.
Right.
So what other strengths do you bring?
I've been a poor boy all my life. I grew up in a federal housing project. My mother was on welfare. I have not forgot what it is to struggle and to miss a meal and have to take care of family. I mean, that's a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So I've been blessed by angels. I've been blessed to be on the bench. So for me, this run is the payback. I got to give back
because
there's other Jimmy Moores, male and female out there. So we got to begin the process of looking at our future, begin the bridge and building that bridge for that whole transition.
Mm-hmm. What's been the response? I mean, like I said, you just announced. So what's been the response? Has
somebody
said, like, about time or what?
I have got a very good reception.
Mm-hmm.
People have been embracing me
mm-hmm.
throughout the first.
That's what I'm saying. People look at the makeup of the district, and a lot of times, like, what's wrong with this picture? And I'm not getting in, you know, just obvious the details is Mr. Brady's has served, he's been around, but he doesn't look like the vast majority of the people in the district.
Well, it's really about what's good for the district.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm not running against personalities. It's not
right,
Jimmy
right.
Moore. It's not the current person that's there. What it's about is about the good of the district and the needs of the district and the future of the district.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my candidacy is about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line.
You are very optimistic. You seem to have a sense of purpose and a sense of the future. How will you articulate that to the people? Because you can't be in the same all over at one time, you know.
We'll have different folks out there carrying the message.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a very organized message. As you indicated, I've ran for a judge some 10 years ago, 11 years ago. I have some sense of what's needed to run a campaign. This is at a higher level. We got some top level advisors. That's going to be the primary focus, getting the message, having people listen, and essentially saying, hey, give us our shot. See, this is a working town in which folks, to our credit, Philadelphia to our credit, goes for the folks just giving the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, give me my shot. Give me my shot.
Okay.
You have 12 years of what? And, you know, give me my shot.
Well, you're a good fit for the community. I just hope they embrace you and you come out swinging, man.
They will embrace me. This is predestined. It is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you talk ground level, when we talk about the hunger in the district, the lack of jobs, the lack of what's happening in the educational system. I mean, you know, folks are going to embrace that. They're going to embrace that.
Okay, brother. Good luck. Unfortunately, I don't live in the district. I live in New Jersey, but I can talk. This is internet radio, so they'll hear about it.
Okay,
man. All right, talk to you, man.
Thank you.
Stay strong.
All right. Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery invades.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try anything.